The Commerce Department's recovering from years of disjointed procurement oversight and spending. Commerce finds millions of dollars in procurement efficiencies thanks to an effort to improve the acquisition process. That effort has been going on for several years now. Barry Berkowitz is senior procurement executive at the Department of Commerce. He tells Federal News Radio executive editor Jason Miller how he's transforming the agency and why his efforts are similar to what other chief acquisition officers say they're trying to do in a new and exclusive Federal News Radio survey of CAOs.
I come in from a program management standpoint more than an 1102. I'm not an 1102 by trade. So even though I manage the procurement activities from a standpoint of policy and oversight for the department, I also have built the acquisition improvement project and built a management structure to do management reviews. We call them the MRBs, the Milestone Review Board process. And we built it from the ground up to handle large programs and projects, high-risk projects, projects that would have a high impact in a department. If, whether they're successful or not, they have a high impact. So the whole concept is the Big A concept. I'd like to use that term. And I've been using that since I've been here, and I hear a lot of people using it, so I can't take credit for the term. So if you look at an A, the actual letter A, put it at the top of the A, put the program manager. One leg is the contracting officer. The other leg is your OGC representative. And the bar holding those two legs together, the resources. That Big A concept of a team to do any big acquisition. So when I look at the Big A acquisition, it's not just the procurement piece, the contract piece. And the problem that I saw when I got here and was actually proven out through a study that was done under contract with LMI was that the emphasis has always been to the right of the life cycle, and it needs to move to the left of the life cycle. Early on in the creation of a project or a program, you need to put that team together. That program manager needs to be working with the contracting officer, with the, you know, the legal folks, and with the resources folks to help build a best approach, an acquisition strategy, which, yes, obviously would have involvement with contracts, but there's a lot of other activity that goes on besides just a contract. But you need to move that whole process to the left of the life cycle. And that's what we've been trying to instill in the department since I've been here and working to build this, the MRB process and the Big A concept. And we built an IPT process in preparation for any major milestone review board. The deputy secretary is the chairman of the Milestone Review Board, and the IPT is made up of headquarters staff folks as well as the folks from the different bureaus, experts that actually review the program information and try to identify areas that the program needs to consider going forward as it goes to a milestone review. And these milestone reviews aren't to review everything and have this deputy secretary opine on all the aspects, but it's what is the actual decision space so that the decision makers are making informed decisions. So we're trying to get the appropriate information to the decision maker. And even though we've identified all the artifacts that are required in each life cycle phase, we're not looking, and we put templates together, so that's in our guidebook, so that a program manager could take a look at this and see exactly what the kind of information that's required. It's not that they have to put together, you know, a huge 100-page document. As a matter of fact, the requirements document by itself may be a paragraph if you're dealing with buying, you know, a coffee maker, and it could be, you know, a couple hundred pages if you're buying a satellite, obviously. So that was one of the other aspects that we found, and this is not typical. I mean, this is not atypical. This is very typical outside of, I would say, DOD, where they do a really good job of this stuff, but even there, you always have these failures. But getting the requirements defined, validated, and really well documented, and doing it early enough in the program so that you are really working towards that and tracking that growth and changes so that you don't have a floating baseline. So we had to build that capability here as well. Looking at the program management piece, the risk at the program level, the cost, we didn't have an independent cost capability. We have that now, which we've been using extensively for major programs. Mostly the satellite area has taken a lot of it, taken advantage of it. It helps build credibility as we go forward, you know, with the stakeholders internally and externally on these programs when you have a good, solid, independent evaluation on the cost. So it everybody always has a bias when you look at cost, depending on where you are.
The survey that we did with the chief acquisition officers, senior procurement executives, others, really hit upon a lot of the things that you brought up, the training piece, the relationship piece with the non-acquisition world, or the broader acquisition world, maybe is a better way to say it. Let me just start with that idea of your priorities, how they relate back to the survey. It sounded like for us, when we did the survey, workforce training, retaining workers, acquisition workers, and then finding efficiencies all kind of were the top three. From your perspective, as you went through your different initiatives and priorities, how do those fit in to what you saw in the survey?
One of the biggest things that I noticed, not just me, but when we did the evaluation, was that we were lacking in program management expertise in a department. No one was paying attention. We didn't have anybody worrying about the care and feeding of program managers. So we actually went out and surveyed the folks and asked self-identification of people that are considered themselves program managers. And we had, it was around 1,000 people identified themselves as program managers. When we took a look at those that actually had a certification or performing really in a program management area, it was quite a bit less. I mean, less than 100. So we have really spent a lot of time in trying to get, and using the FACT PPM certification process, getting our people certified and identified and getting the data associated with that into our data system so we can track and see where they are and really try to get them moving forward and getting to the right level of education and skills, which comes through experience. So we've been doing a good job, I would say, of that. We spent a lot of time doing that. And we have somebody that's almost dedicated to working with program managers to help them identify where they are and what they need to get to the right level for the different programs. Also, as we go through, whether it's an IT review board or an MRB, we track and take a look and make sure that the projects and programs have the appropriate level of program manager assigned to them. And we identify when it's not, and it goes back to that bureau to work on getting the right people, you know, tied to those projects so that we have the appropriate level of trained and certified people working these projects.
You bring up project management, and that's been a bugaboo for the government for years and years, probably decades. What did you guys do to kind of address that program management challenge? A lot of agencies I talk to say, well, we're going to set up a program management office. A lot of people then talk about, well, we got to do better at requirements definition. We got to do better at the project management piece of program management. And then the business acumen skills are part of that. Where did you guys focus first, and then where are you heading now?
All three of those elements you mentioned are part of being a program manager. Now, some of the things you don't get through training. Business acumen, I don't see anywhere, I've never seen a course that I could take, or I've never taken a course, and I'm old enough to see a few of them, where you're going to build business acumen. I mean, it comes about through a lot of experience, and I like to utilize, as a matter of fact, lawyers that are contract lawyers, business lawyers that have been around for a long time and have seen a lot of different approaches to life. They have a lot to offer as far as, hey, did you think about approaching something this way? They have a lot of business acumen because they've seen so many activities. There's a two-edged sword here on program managers. Just like with a contracting officer, you want people to have experience that goes the breadth of potential opportunities or probabilities of a project or an acquisition. And what we end up seeing is you'll have people, unless they move around a lot and get the opportunity for growth, maybe an expert in a particular type of acquisition. And when you look at most of the civilian agencies, there's not a lot of the big, high-tech, bleeding-edge acquisitions. Even in this department, when you take a look at the number of transactions we have, I'd say 80% of them are simplified. When you look at, but we also buy satellites, we buy ships, we buy airplanes. So when you take a look at contracting officers in many of the civilian agencies, or even in the military at the base level, they're buying, I'll call, commodities. They're buying, you know, 2x4s, toilet paper, pens, pencils. And that's what they've done almost their whole career. And then if you put somebody who's used to buying that kind of product into a program office that where you're buying a satellite or a weapon system or something, you know, high tech and, excuse me, large, you end up have a mismatch of the expertise. So what we've tried to do is take a look at, you know, the backgrounds of our folks, and with the new FATAS system, you were able to actually start tracking and seeing where people's skill sets are. And so in our case, as someone's coming up for a certification, we were looking at that and taking a look at their competencies and recommending areas where they need to spend some time to expand in their capabilities. So that's one of the problems, is how do you really get that? So we try to incentivize people to move around and to get the experience that's needed so that we can get the benefit of that. But the problem is, though, that there's only so much that can be done. There's only so many opportunities. So it takes time. So, you know, the new certification requirements are, in my opinion, are kind of light on the experience. You only need 1 year to get to that level one. You know, you need a couple of years to get to level two, 4 years for level three. And in many cases, in 4 years, if you just came into the government and started as a, you know, this is for a contracting officer and or even a program manager, if you're just coming in, you may not in 4 years get the breadth of experience that you really need to be a certified at level three. So that's where it becomes problematic. And looking at people's background, you have to spend a lot more time assessing their actual competencies, which is different than what was just a few years ago. So I think we're making progress in the government relative to that, but it takes a lot of discipline to do that. I wanted, when I first got here, I recommended we create a PMO for the department. That takes resources. There's never enough resources. So what we've built is more capabilities, if you will, in each of the bureaus. And then we have up here at headquarters just a small cadre, three people really, four if you consider me, that have the program management expertise. And bureaus will come and ask us for support if they don't have it internally. And we provide support for across the department to help with the program management, to review activities or provide some of the the guidance and counsel. Again, this is not a paper exercise. This is not a pencil exercise of saying, well, do you have all these documents? It's a matter of, have you thought about these activities? Have you considered all this? Do you have your requirements? Are they really, you know, developed and documented, and are they validated? Majority of the time, the first time the requirement comes forward, it's really not what they need. It's what they think they need, and you need to go through that validation process. That's a big weakness. It always has been. Even in DOD, it still is, even though there's people there that are requirements generators, and where the emphasis is gets taken care of. A lot of the other stuff that comes along, it doesn't get quite that emphasis. And it's a discipline process. It takes effort to continue a discipline process.
Our exclusive Chief Acquisition Officer survey is out. You can read the details now at federalnewsradio.com. My colleague Jason Miller discussed the results with the Commerce Department Senior Procurement Executive Barry Berkowitz. One of the topics the survey covered is training for the acquisition workforce.
OFPP had put out a memo saying all training needs to be going through FADIS, all documentation, all updates. So you guys are using it, obviously. You got to meet the OFPP memo. We know that. You wouldn't tell me differently. But
it's not just meeting the memo. The memo is great, but that's not the intent. That's actually a great tool. And by having it, we can now take a look and see where people's capabilities are and where the weaknesses are and what helps us with our determination of their competencies. So it's a good system. It's a very good system.
And that was actually part of my question, is what benefits are you seeing from it? Because the training piece, again, every time we do this survey year after year, training is always among the top. Yes. And retention is among the top priority. And retention, I think, has a big long tail back to training. Because if you're not being trained, if you don't feel like you're moving up, learning new things, you say, well, maybe I'll leave and go somewhere else. Right. So talk about how FADIS kind of brings all that together.
When we have money available for training, one of the things that we do is, based on our surveys that we do relative to competencies of our staff, we take a look at where the weaknesses are and we purchase training in those particular areas, or we direct people to training in those particular areas. So using FADIS, we can get to DAU training, we can get to FAI training, and then on top of that, we take a look at what's also commercially available, and we supplement that with, you know, vouchers or whatever is available to get additional training. While we were building our MRB process, we actually did our own some internal training. We have some people that are quite, you know, expert, and there's no reason not to take advantage of their expertise.
Let me jump in. You said when there's money for training. Interesting, this year the money issue in training didn't come up as it did in previous years. I think part of the reason is because there was a budget for agencies, albeit a little bit late. Sequestration was at least held off for this year. And I think there's a feeling that many agencies got plus ups. Are you guys rebounding from 2012 and 2013 when sequestration hit? and it took big chunks out of your budget. And usually, as we know, training is the first to go.
Everybody has a different circumstance. And we had some circumstances in this department, which we have to go by our priorities. So we haven't had the opportunity yet to truly rebound. One of the things that we did was we pushed things out to the bureaus and said, you need to start taking care of this internally instead of doing it all centrally. I don't think that we're there yet. The thing that we've tried to do, though, is to make sure that the training is available, and through IDPs and working with the individuals to make sure that they take advantage of the training that's there. There's a lot of training available through FAI, through DAU, and also through other agencies. As a matter of fact, I run a Big A conference every year. This in May. And this year, we actually had the VA Academy come and over a three-day period actually teach classes. And it was a tremendous success. Matter of fact, we had turned people away. So we take advantage of the available seats available throughout the government. So we have someone that in our training area that is in contact with other agencies and sends out emails very regularly, almost every week, when there's a seat available for this class in this organization or that organization. So we try to take advantage of everything that's out there. And that efficiency is taking the place of having a lot of cash around. You don't need to do everything with cash. Now, someone is paying for that, obviously, but we're taking advantage as whenever we can.
And I think that's something I hear from a lot of acquisition officers, you know, when I talk to people in your position, is taking advantage of those DAU, those FAI opportunities. And then you look at some of the other agencies, whether it's Treasury or DHS or VA, people are developing their own kind of training academies, and they're opening it up when there's, as you said, seats available. Let me jump over to a related topic. One thing about training, one thing about business acumen, requirements definition, is the efficiencies discussion. Well, the thing about the survey that came up was a lot of agencies are trying to find efficiencies in their contracting. Again, big push by the Obama administration to reduce duplication. Talk a little bit about how you guys are kind of continuing that role of efficiencies.
4 years ago, we really stepped out extensively and did some spend analysis, which is very difficult in most agencies because we don't have that. That data is not clearly defined down to the level you need to do the spend analysis. But we did the spend analysis, we identified targets, and we went forward with a strategic sourcing effort, which has been successful in this department. Extremely. We've returned no less than 700% rate of return, as high as 900% on these efforts. One example that we get a lot of notoriety for is our PC contract. You know, we went from over 200 individual contracts to buy PCs in this department and thousands of transactions, each one requiring a contracting officer or a specialist, down to one contract and no contracting officers or specialists required, because the purchases are done through a portal. We also do a constant technology refresh on that contract at least two times a year, and we've been able to standardize configurations from multiple different configurations that anybody could just, you know, pick out to three standard desktop configurations and three laptop configurations, as well as peripherals. So this PC contract has generated tremendous amount of dollar savings, not just direct dollar savings, but the secondary, the administrative savings. Think about the fact that we go from thousands of contracting officer and specialist transactions to zero. That is a significant administrative saving. So that effort is one that we are trying to replicate throughout our other strategic sourcing efforts. And we've been moving that on and on and on. And what we've identified is over $800 million worth of common spend in a department. And that is our first target as we're moving into our shared service effort. So all of that common spend is moving to the shared service center as our first step, because we've already identified that spend. And I mean, our intent is to build a single portal for all of the requirements coming through that, so that the data, because the data that we're able to generate through the PC portal or through even any of our other contracts is tremendous. And that's what you need to make sure that you're not getting leakage and to find where we have issues so we can adjust this and keep the efficiencies going. So the plan is to have a portal for our shared service area. All the requests going through that will generate the data we need to be able to identify where we need to have sourcing vehicles. We're going to do this through category management. So we are You know, we're all in on this, and we've been working this shared service stuff, starting with the evaluation and the first phase, and now we're moving into the implementation phase, and we're putting those plans together and looking to hopefully be up and running in that area very shortly. So we are definitely, we're big, we bought in, we're all in on this one.
You brought up category management, and I want to go back to that in a second because there's some interesting survey results around that. But before I do that, when you talk about that, you identified $800 million in common spend as your first target, mostly technology, or do you look at some of the other commodities like furniture, like you mentioned, pens and pencils?
Yes. Everything. We've looked at everything. And obviously with the pens and pencils, we have the FSSI contracts that we have mandated throughout the department, so for office supplies. But yes, we have looked at everything. So when you take a look at it, there's a couple of areas that came up as high. Obviously, IT products and services are some of the biggest stuff. So that's of the $800 million common, that's a lot of it. But there's HR services. There's even contract closeout services. Now, there's one that we should be able to be centralizing and doing for the whole department. Why, you know, have different contracts across the department for closeout services. So, yes, we're looking at everything. IT, obviously, is one of the big areas.
And when you say you're going to set up this portal, so the idea would be for a portal that is, whether it's run by your office or one of the other bureaus, but everybody, National Weather Service, NOAA, Census, PTO, would all go to buy these commodities. Right. You're not saying necessarily one contract. No, you're just funneling them through this portal.
Right. Yes, through a portal. They're behind it, which would be in, you know, invisible to the user, they don't care, would be all of those other contracts. Also, the portal would have the capability, based on the individual that's putting the request in, to know what approvals have to be provided, and it would, you know, route it to the right levels for the approvals. So there's, you know, be four basic levels of support, if you will, behind this thing. The zero level is really just that interface with the user directly with the portal. But then you have all the way up to the high level, level four, where if you need someone to help with requirements generation, requirements documentation, requirements validation, you'd get that support through the shared service organization. The PM support to help build the artifacts you need for a good acquisition, you could get that through the level four support.
What's the timing to set this up? You said very soon. I'm going to ask you to define soon, because in government talk, that's a week to 6 years.
Less than 6 years, but longer than a week. It's been almost a year, I think, that we started this process. Matter of fact, it was last summer when it was identified that we need to do something in the areas of, you know, acquisition, HR, IT, and finance. But the big thing was that we looked at this stuff, started looking at it a year ago, and we've just completed, like I said, that the current state and what the future state would look like, and define those four areas that we want to go after. The deputy secretary is the lead for this, if you will, our department management council is the governance board for this. So we are now in the process of building our implementation plans. So we don't have those finished yet. So I can't give you a hard date. I have kind of, in my own mind, I have a view that it should take no more than, and I'm sorry I'm going to say this, but I don't think it should take us any more than 18 months to have, at least for the first piece that we're dealing with, up and running. Now, obviously, if we can get it faster, we will do it faster, but I'm just using, this is my gut telling me that I think we haven't done the implementation planning completed. That's not completed yet. Once that's completed, we'll be able to give you a better idea on that.